Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. Let there be light. For those of you just tuning into the podcast right now, our series for this month is entitled, from a very popular Christmas song, My Grown-Up Christmas List. I believe Natalie Cole was the first one to record it back in the day, and several people, Kelly Clarkson, several people have recorded it. I want to use the lyric. I will refer to the lyrics in this song several times this month, but the full title is My Grown-Up Christmas List, Creating Miracles by Perceiving Your World as It Could Be. I want to use a text that I refer to a lot, and I make no apology for it. I love this verse of Scripture, and I particularly love the way it's translated in the Koboris manuscript, which, as you know, is written in Aramaic, which was the language that Jesus actually spoke. The Old Testament was written in Hebrew. The New Testament was written in Greek. Jesus actually spoke Aramaic. It's a very old language. It actually predates Hebrew. If you remember, I've taught about the phrase abracadabra, which actually comes from an Aramaic term that means I create as I speak. When Judah was leading a prayer, he's among the other things, he said, God, do something magical here today. Some people say, is that a word okay to use? Yes, Christmas is magical. The three wise men were called the Magi. They were magicians. They were not just astronomers, they were astrologers. If you know anything about how the celestial bodies work, the reason Jesus was actually born in April, but the reason Christmas is celebrated December 25th is because it is the winter solstice, when it has to do with the stars. And I don't know if any of you follow Barbara Simons on Facebook. I've never met her, but really interesting woman who is kind of on a very similar track that I'm on. She was charismatic, involved with deliverance ministry, that sort of thing, and she sort of evolved into very much what we, the way we teach, and incorporating our past into our present. And she posted something very interesting yesterday about how even the stars coming together created a cross in the heavens and the sign of it, and even when people say Jesus is the reason for the season. No, not really. The pagans celebrated on December 25th for millennia before Jesus was born in Bethlehem. The Catholic Church Christianized all the pagan rituals, but the reason at Christmas we don't just sing about Jesus, but we also sing Jingle Bells and Winter Wonderland and Let It Snow and Marshmallow World. We sing all these winter songs because it's also a celebration of winter. And let me also say, it's fine if people want to make a big deal about saying Merry Christmas, but nobody said you couldn't say Merry Christmas. When somebody says Happy Holidays, it's not an anti-Christ statement. Pick something else to fight about if you want to, fight about the economy or something, but not when people say, I'm going to say Merry Christmas no matter what. I'm like, fine, nobody told you not to. Happy Holidays means Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Merry Christmas, Happy New Year. Happy Hanukkah. There's a lot of holidays this time of year up till January 5th, which is the Feast of Epiphany. That was a lot, but I have to get all this said, so I have to say that so I can say this. You have heard it said, comma, but I say. Anyway, this passage in the Aramaic is where most people are familiar with the King James, where it says, If thine eye be single, thy whole body be filled with light. The word single got translated in Elizabethan English. The better word is healthy. If your eye is healthy, like the way you see things will determine the amount of light that you walk in. Here's what it says. This is Matthew 6, 22 and 23. And this is probably just 22, actually, what I have here. Or maybe I have 23 on here, too. Let me see. It says, this is how it says in the Aramaic. And what's interesting about this Aramaic is the language here taps into things that historians didn't believe ancient people knew about. Things like the subconscious, things that many people thought Freud discovered were actually, you find in the Aramaic language, the Bible has a lot of psychological truth in it, things that help us not just with our spirit, but also with our mind. And it says here, what Jesus actually said is, the light for your earthly life is perception. You've heard the quote, we don't see the world as it is, we see it as we are. Therefore, if your perception is without fault, your whole life shall be enlightened. Enlightenment is not just some New Age word, it's a biblical word. If your perception be evil, your whole life shall be darkened by it. If the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? Now, let me just show you the lyrics to my grown-up Christmas list. You're familiar with it. I won't sing it. But it was written by David Foster. And this, it says, it's someone writing ideally to Santa Claus. And what they say is, do you remember me? I sat upon your knee. I wrote to you with childhood fantasies. That comes from the idea of somebody writing a letter to Santa, and you tell him what you want, and it manifests. Well, I'm all grown up now and still need help somehow. I'm not a child, but my heart still can dream. Paul said, when I became a child, I put away childish things. So the premise of this song, it's a great song. It's saying, when I was a kid, my list was about a bicycle or a doll or, you know. And we all, our inner child can always remember. It's so cool when you got the thing that you actually wanted. I mean, I'm telling you, my inner 8-year-old can still think about getting that Billy Blastoff. I loved space stuff. And Billy Blastoff was this little thing that Mattel made. He was a little spaceman. He was like a kid spaceman. And he had a little backpack, and you clicked him down into this like moon tractor, and he had like a tractor and a space, like the little car would ride around, and he had a little TV thing that you clicked in and it would light up. In the late 60s, that was high tech. I just remember when I opened that, I was like, oh. And the only thing that transcended it was the next year getting my gold GTO bike with the banana seat. Remember how they were in the 60s? And you had that little thing that you put on the bar that you put on the back so you could pop wheelies? Oh, my God. And my parents let me open it on Christmas Eve. And I said, can I please take it outside and ride it right now? Because I couldn't wait till in the morning. And this was unusual for my overprotective mother. She said, yeah, as long as you stay in the streetlights, you can ride it. I'm getting a rush right now just thinking about what it felt like to be on that bike, riding around at night, mind you. I was like, I mean, for me, that was like going to Las Vegas and gambling and winning a lot of money. I mean, that was like, I'm breaking all the rules, baby, on that GTO bicycle. I wish I could find it. There's a Polaroid that my dad took of me with the bike. And if you saw it, you would think I was being exact, like just being funny. I wasn't. It was this look was sincere. But what this is saying is, now that I'm grown up, I understand that principle, but I also want to put this list out for a better world. It's a great concept, because it's saying what I visualized as a child was valid, but now I understand it's not just about me, it's about making the world a better place. I don't know if any of you saw. Did any of you see the Andy Griffith episode I posted last week? I had never seen that before, and I found it on some website. And a lot of people misunderstood why I posted it. This is why I tweeted, was it yesterday or day before? I said, I understand why some people heard Jesus give parables and thought he was giving a lecture on agriculture. And I did a hashtag from Monty Python's Life of Brian, Blessed Are the Cheesemakers. I don't know if you ever saw it. It's not funny to me because it stresses me out because it's too close to my reality. But they show in the life of Brian, Brian is somebody that grew up close to Jesus, and he keeps being mistaken for Jesus. But in the beginning of it, and if you go rent it, it's not a family movie. It's very R-rated. So don't take the kids and say, Bishop said it's a great one. You know, don't. But I always have to give that disclaimer when I recommend a movie. But it shows Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount, and people are so far away from him, they can't quite hear what he's saying, and they keep misunderstanding him, and they're like, blessed are the cheesemakers. Blessed are the cheesemakers. Why are the cheesemakers blessed? Of course, he's saying blessed are the peacemakers. Clearly, some of y'all don't get it even now as I'm acting it out. And so I've learned, I put something out there, and like, there was one day I just posted, who told you were naked? Now, most of you would understand I mean something very deep by that. I had people posting stuff about nakedness. I thought, this is the way you see the world. Just when I think you can't get any shallower, you swim back to the shallow end of the pool. So I just let it go. But I was not just posting something about the Andy Griffith Show. It's really interesting. I love that show anyway, but there's something about this episode that's very different, and it's Barney Fife goes to this place where it's this box that's supposed to be, it's like a magic box, and he tells Opie about three wishes, and they actually get what they ask for. It's very much like what quantum physics tells you about the quantum field is infinite, and that what we visualize through the observer effect collapses into our reality, and I'll be connecting the dots with the scriptures on that this month. But what this is about is tapping into the miraculous aspect of Christmas. Whether you're talking about the virgin birth, whether you believe that's literal or not, it's a miraculous idea. Even if you're not talking about those things, I don't know how many of you have heard the podcast that I do with Mary Carroll, but we were talking one day. It's an interesting vibe that we have, because I'm free to refer to the scriptures, whatever, but just because she's very open-minded. But it's definitely, like this past Thursday, we talked all about sexual harassment and Matt Lauer. And so we talk about everything, earthing. But she was telling me the other day how much she loves, on the podcast, how much she loves It's a Wonderful Life. And she said, I hate to admit it, but sometimes three or four times during the year, I will get it out and watch it again because it speaks to me so deeply. And I said, well, I would tell you, if it came right down to should I read the Bible or watch It's a Wonderful Life, I would tell you to watch the movie. Because with the Bible, you're going to have to know how to interpret, you're going to have to rightly divide it. And if you don't know how to rightly divide it, you're going to read things into it that those writers didn't even mean. Like, fundamentalism is such a perversion of what those Eastern writers meant. They were speaking in metaphor. When people argue about, was the ark literal? Were there two zebras and kangaroos? You've totally missed the point of what that story was about. Anyway, you all know that, but I need to say it. But I said, yeah, if that's what speaks to you, it's still a miraculous story. Whether it's the Grinch realizing that even if he steals all the presents from Whoville, he can't steal Christmas because it's a state of mind. That's a paradigm shift. That's being born again at Christmas. Or whether it's Ebenezer Scrooge reconciling his past, present, and future with the ghost of Christmas. We all have a ghost of Christmas past, a ghost of Christmas present. So, and I've shared this with you many, many times. But all of these things, even this week, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was on, and I saw things in it this time. I got to tell you, I fast-forward through some of it because it's a little slow in places, but this time I really never noticed how much a Christ figure the King Moonracer is, because it's nearly like a C.S. Lewis thing, you know, because C.S. Lewis always would portray Jesus as a lion, and he's a lion with a crown, and he takes all the misfit toys. Well, I'm feeling the anointing on this. He takes all the misfit toys that everybody else has given up on, and he puts them on this island. I'm thinking, a bruised reed he shall not break, a smoking flax he will not quench. But you say that to some people, and they're like, oh, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, well, that's just a kid song. I'm like, okay, to you it is. If your perception is evil, your body is not filled with light. There's other people I can say, Did y'all see Rudolph the Reindeer? It was really, I mean, it's powerful about bullying. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer. There's clearly a gay subtext to it. When the dad says, no son of mine's going to have a red nose, and he kicks him out. I know so many LGBT people that can relate to that. The whole thing about what you think is wrong with you is really what's right with you, because one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa's going to come to you and say, with your nose so bright, that thing that everybody's made fun of you and you've been embarrassed for and you thought was wrong about you and your daddy kicked you out of the house for it, won't you guide my sleigh tonight? And then, oh yeah, sure, then all the reindeer loved him as they shouted out with glee. That sounds about right. But it's a great concept. The Little Drummer Boy is a great concept. All these are wonderful songs. I saw something this week in a song that I've never referred to, and it's so nuanced. It's such a subtle message. And for me, usually the most profound things are sort of simple and subtle. And I'll share it with you in just a moment, but let me show you this quote. Oh, let me finish this song. So she goes, so here's my lifelong wish, my grown-up Christmas list, not for myself, but for a world in need. And here's where he or she begins to make. This voice sounds female to me, I guess because I've mostly heard women sing it. But she says, here's my list now. And it's no more lives torn apart, that wars would never start, and time would heal all hearts, and everyone would have a friend, and right would always win, and love would never end. This is my grown-up Christmas list. Now, cynics would look at that and say, dream on, baby. You clearly haven't watched the news lately, because that is not the way the world is moving. But the exact point of the song, the reason why it's a sin to resent Christmas, to even complain about Christmas, it is a holy time. Whether you're a Christian or not, it's just a holy time when people make room for the miraculous. And it's a time where you become aspirational to say, yeah, I'm aware of what's going on in the world, but here's my grown-up Christmas list. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we put an intention out to the universe that no more wars would start? What if that would happen? You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope that one day you'll join us and the world will be as one. Imagine might as well be a Christmas carol. Because it's that same ideology. People misunderstood it. When John Lennon was not Antichrist. People completely missed that song. What he was saying is, imagine there's no heaven and hell that people fight over. Because I can tell you, I grew up in an environment where people fought over hell, heaven and hell every single day. About who was going, who was not going. Well, I'm going, but you're not going. I'm right, but you're not right. And he comes along and says, imagine there's no heaven. Imagine there's no hell. Above us, only sky. That's an atheist song. No, it's not. No, it's not. When the God voice speaks in Genesis, he doesn't say, let us make people in our image and send the majority of them to hell. He says, let's make people in our image and let them have dominion on the earth. The heaven and hell concepts came later, and they were mostly man-made. That's why in Genesis you see a serpent. By the time you get to the Revelation, it's dragons. Why? How did that serpent become a dragon? Because people imagined dragons. And I know that's the name of a group, but I don't know if that's why they named their group that, Imagine Dragons. But the first time I heard it, I was like, whoa, I don't know if they knew what they just tapped into there. But that's the crux of spiritual warfare. Imagine dragons. You see it now with the man from Alabama that's running. If you have an issue to work out, fine, work it out. Don't call it spiritual warfare. But he's doing that. He said, well, this is just the devil trying to keep somebody like me. No. That's too easy. You need to own up to if it's untrue, then that's fine. But don't put this in the spiritual warfare column because you're just imagining dragons. And for people that aren't savvy enough to know better than that, they're sucked in by it. Jesus said, now the God of this world's cast down. Satan has come to me, but there's nothing in me. This whole idea of this great Armageddon that's going on all the time, this is something that people have imagined. But if you're looking for demons, you can find them. If you believe in hell, you can, I don't know, in some reality there may be a hell for people that have believed that. That's what they've created with their imagination. Could be. Now, let me show you this. William Blake, who lived over a century ago, but a great writer, he says, if the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. For man has closed himself up till he sees all things through narrow chinks of his cavern. This morning I woke up and it's interesting because I was looking at the fog and I was thinking about, because I have a huge picture window in my loft, and I'm telling you, it looked like that's what it looked like outside my window. I mean, you couldn't see anything. And we were talking about the first time I took Ken up to Lookout Mountain. We went out to Point Park there where some of us went last year. Incredible view of Tennessee River Valley and what they call Moccasin Bend. You couldn't see a thing. I mean, it was so foggy. And I'm telling him, I said, you have no idea. You can't believe how spectacular this view is, but you can't see it. A few months later, we went back and he's blown away. I said, do you understand my frustration? Because we're standing here, I'm like, oh my God, if you could only see what exists right there, but you can't see it. We were talking about it this morning, and I said, you know, my freshman year in college, my roommate and his girlfriend came home with me for Thanksgiving. And I was showing them around Atlanta, and I drove them out to Stone Mountain. It was so, I've never seen it that foggy there. You couldn't see Stone Mountain. And I said, no, you have no idea. There's like this ginormous rock that sticks out of the ground. They're like, okay, I guess. And this is before you could Google something and find pictures of it. I was like, no, you have no idea. And I said, well, let's climb it. We climbed it. So you could see a few feet in front of you. Get to the top, you can't see a thing. That doesn't mean it didn't exist. So he says, if his perception is cleansed, everything would appear to him as it is, not just how you think it is. So much of traditional Christianity has been based on an illusion. Who told you you were naked? Well, I don't know, this serpent did. All of Christianity came out of that idea. As soon as Adam and Eve looked for the first fig leaf to try to cover themselves, they created religion. Was there a fall of man? Yes, but it was in their perception. Adam, where are you? God already knew that he'd eaten from the tree. If he had said, Adam, where are you? And Adam had said, right here, just finishing up a piece of the fruit that you told me not to eat. I'll be out in just a minute. We have a completely different reality now. We would be living in heaven on earth now. And so much of Christianity has promoted that idea because most Christians still don't believe that God really loves them. They've been taught that God loves them through Christ. Dressed in his righteousness alone, destined to stand before the throne. So the whole idea is God can't stomach me. But if I can be accepted in the Beloved, then he can see me through the blood of Jesus. Now, I know that's tricky territory because we were taught to love the blood and all of, and that's great. But let me tell you, next level is realizing when he said, who told you you were naked? The answer should have been, I'm not naked. Doug Wentz posted something. He posted so much good stuff day before yesterday. I said, you have to stop. Everything I read, you're making the baby in my womb leap so much. I've got motion sickness. Stop it. I'm just trying to go through my day and everything I'm reading. You're making me throw my phone across the, like, what the heck did you just say? And he connected the dots this week. I never even thought of it. He said, Jesus in John 10 quoted Psalm says, "You are gods." The serpent says, "God knows if you eat from this tree, you will be like God." I was like, shut up. Because that should have been the first. If there was a serpent, and I believe it's metaphorical, but if the serpent says to them, "He knows if you eat this, you'll be like God," they should have said, "That's why we're here. He said, create people in my image, let them be like me." So Paul comes along as he's working through his Mosaic influence. And you can hear when the bright light from heaven speaks through Paul, or when Gamaliel, or Moses via Gamaliel speaks through him. I mean, it nearly makes him sound bipolar. Because the same guy who says women should be silent in the church, the woman is under the man is under Christ, is also the same guy that said in Christ is neither male nor female. Which is the truth. The bright light from heaven spoke through him and transcended gender. When Moses spoke through him, Moses said, if your daughter's raped, you can sell her to the rapist for a cut rate. So Paul was having to work through, because misogyny, racism, and homophobia all came from people misunderstanding the Bible or Holy Writ and making it, creating a fundamental interpretation of it. Man, I'm preaching good today. All right. Let me show you this. This is Matthew chapter 2, verse 1 and 2, and this is from Matthew in the Now, which I have to say, you know, I don't promote my books. I don't advertise them. I don't travel and sell them. I don't have a book table anymore. I would if somebody asked me. If somebody asked me to go, but I think I must not be putting that intention out there. Maybe I just don't want to fly anymore. Maybe that's it. But, I mean, A Year in the Now was written 16 years ago, 17 years ago. My last book was 5 years ago, 6 years ago. Well, it had to been, because had I met you when I was finishing out the book? Okay, we've been together 6 years, so it's got to be around 6 years. So it's not like I'm promoting the books. And this week, now it's not huge book sales, but in our staff meeting this week, Avery said, "We just sold 2 A Year in the Now. Amazon.com ordered 7 more. You just sold It's All Good. You just sold a 2020 Vision. You just sold a CD." And I'm like, who the heck's buying all this stuff? I'm not promoting it. Praise God, it's out there. Come on, royalty check, Jesus. But Matthew in the Now, I wish I had broken up the, I think it's got too much ink in it. I wish I'd done like subtitles in it, but there may be another edition. We'll see. But here's my translation of it. "Now, when the man Jesus was born as a baby in Bethlehem of Judea during the reign of Herod the king, astrologers from the east came to Jerusalem to inquire about him. These astrologers, or magi, originated from a religious caste among the Persians who were devoted to divination, or the practice of the magic arts, and to the interpretation of dreams. They came from southern Arabia, where they had long maintained a tradition of Israelite messianic expectation that had survived in the region since the days of the Queen of Sheba. And this tradition survived alongside their practice of astrology. When they came to Jerusalem, they began to ask around, 'Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we have charted his star in the east through our understanding of the zodiac and have come to worship him.'" There's a great teacher. Any of y'all remember Marilyn Hickey from back in the day? She had a great teaching years ago about how originally the signs of the zodiac and the constellations all preached the gospel. And now people have put evil on them, and they've made it like, well, you know, Moses said you're not supposed to do that. Well, Moses said you're not supposed to wear blended fabrics, and you're wearing that too. You got to take Moses with a grain of salt. When Moses and Elijah appeared with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration, if you'll notice, Moses did not have the Ten Commandments with him. So he had moved on from there. I think Moses is probably surprised that we're still stuck on it. All these people that are arguing over, there ought to be Ten Commandments on the wall of the courthouse. Are you Antichrist? Jesus said there's only two to think about now. Love God with all of your heart. Love your neighbors. You love yourself. What we have now that's called Christianity is such a weird, warped, perverted mutation that is not even nearly a facsimile of what the message of Jesus was. I mean, it's so unlike, I mean, it's nearly unrecognizable. That's why when people say, well, Jesus is the reason for the season, I'm like, baby, you don't even know what you're talking about. I was thinking about it this week, and I've taught on it before, but I thought, you know, the Christmas story is a very universalist story. These magicians from Persia don't know a thing about biblical, well, they wouldn't even call it the Bible. They don't know anything about prophecies of the prophets. Don't you remember they come to Herod and they say, where is he? And Herod didn't even know. Herod brings somebody who understood the scriptures and he said, can you tell me where the Messiah was predicted to be born? And the guy goes into what we call the book of Micah and he finds a transcript of Micah's prophecy that says he'll be born in the city of David. And that's the whole reason why Mary and Joseph had a decree from Caesar Augustus, because they were fulfilling Micah's prophecy. I'm just telling you, all words have power, but some people's words have more power than others. And when Micah said, they just do. You know, the centurion could say to Jesus, speak a word and my servant will be healed. You can't say that to everybody. I'm just telling you. But Micah said he's going to be born there. So Mary, you know, Joseph takes Mary in her third trimester of pregnancy to Bethlehem for the sole purpose of doing a census and to be taxed. But it became a nexus for the Magi to come to Bethlehem. And it says when they got there, they saw the star. Did not come through the scriptures. Hear me. This has nothing to do with the scriptures. This was Jesus in the stars. And then, that's in Matthew. In Luke, the angels appear not to theologians, not to prophets, not to anybody in the temple. Temple has nothing to do with it. They appear to some, what we would call blue-collar workers. There's some shepherds. Shepherds in that day would be like construction workers and garbage men and you know, like people that just do the nitty-gritty kind of work. That's that in that culture, that's what shepherds were. Shepherds in our culture would be like beer drinking, football watching guys who use bad language. You know, the guys you work with. And not just an angel, but a choir of angels appears to these guys, which clearly shows you the gospel is for the common man. It's not. It has nothing to do with religious falderah. And then the message is, fear not, for I bring you good tidings of great joy, which shall be to all people. Not just Israelites. This will be to everybody. Not everybody conditionally. Not everybody who doesn't reject the vengeful Jesus. Because this is the Jesus Christianity has produced. He loves you so much, he died on the cross. But if you reject him, I'm going to send you to hell. I mean, don't you think, doesn't that seem like a conflict? I mean, I'm thinking, if the cross did save humanity, if I was Jesus, I'd come down off that cross going, oh, hell no. You're not going to hell. You know what I mean? If I went to all this and took stripes on my back, whatever, ain't no way I'm letting you be damned for eternity. Doesn't even make sense that he would, if the cross is literal, why would he do that? And now he's so fragile and pouty and vengeful, notwithstanding that he's told us to forgive other people 70 times 7, but he can't forgive, like, you don't appreciate what I did. I'm going to burn you forever and ever and ever because I got nail prints in my hand and you didn't like them. You know, if you give somebody something, you give it and release it. If you give somebody something and then you're mad because they didn't respond the way you wanted them to, it wasn't really a gift. You know what I've noticed this over the years, and I'm loath to talk about finances because I'm in such a different headspace now. But one thing I saw, and I saw it I was an associate pastor for 5 years, and then I had church in the now for 30 years. So for my entire adult life, I've pastored a church. I had somebody post today, "Are you still in Midtown?" It was in that same one you wrote on. And I said, "Yeah, never left. Never took Sunday off. Been here." Anyway, I saw this, and some of you sitting here will know exactly what I mean by this. The ones who gave the most money didn't even have an opinion about what you did with it. They didn't even care. You know what I mean? It's like they were like, "Oh, we're good, we trust you, whatever." The ones that didn't give just picked over every little thing. There was this one guy that called me one day, and he was mad because his wife came to the church and she had tithed, and he said, "You've told people that they should tithe and not pay their bills." I said, "I don't know if your wife told you that, but those words have never come from my mouth." And he said, "I'm going to the news to report you because you're stealing money from people and they can't even pay their bills." I said, "You can go to the news, but there's no record of me ever saying that." Well, he called so much. I mean, it was harassment. So finally, I said, "Here's the numbers of the news. Go, just save me the time and stop threatening me, and go to the news and say, because you're going to find there's nobody that's ever gone to my church that will tell you that I've said don't pay your bills and give to this church. I've never said that." He just wouldn't give it up. Finally, of course, I was working with Debbie. I said, "Look up this woman's name and find out what they've got. I'm going to return their money." It was like, I think out of several years, it was less than $500. I said, "Write them a check and please get this guy off my back." And I thought, this is typical. The people that don't give are highly opinionated about money. Always. "Well, that preacher just did it for the money." Well, it's certainly any of your money. So I don't know why you have an opinion. I promise you, everybody that's ever said preachers just did it for the money never gave a penny. You can write it down. The ones that are extravagant givers, they're like, "Oh, I didn't even know. Oh, that's great." You know, but don't even have an opinion about it. It's because you release it. Well, you know, the first time Patrick came, when you guys came to Metron, I had said something. It was one of the first times you came. I had said something about having to work through my own, not guilt, because I don't really do guilt, but processing that people gave to a building that I no longer have. And there's a part, the integrity of part. And Patrick's, he said, "I don't want to rebuke you," but he said, "Those of us that gave to that, we don't even think like that." He said, we gave to an idea or a dream. It wasn't a building we were given to, which I knew. I mean, I knew, but some things you know, but until somebody actually says it, he said, "Just so you know, none of us who gave to that, that ever crosses our mind." Because that's the way giving is. So if we're that way, why in the world would Jesus send people to hell when he's already... So when the angel says, "Here's good tidings of great joy, we shall be to all people. For unto you is born this day in the city of David a Savior, which is Christ the Lord." And what's amazing is, listen to me, there's no indication that these men converted to Christianity. But it says when they came, can anybody tell me what they did? They brought gifts, but also they what? They worshiped him. Do you understand what I'm saying? Persian magicians who worked the zodiac got him, saw him, worshiped him. Now you have a generation of Christians going, "All those Muslims are going to hell." Like, oh my God. Do you not even have any comprehension. I'm not saying to ignore terrorism. I'm saying Islamic terrorism is the product of fundamentalism, just like the Ku Klux Klan and all that kind of stuff is the product of Christian fundamentalism. It is so perverted. It's way more perverted than child molestation. And I know that's a strong statement, but I have to make a point to take the holy word of God, which it is the most inclusive idea. When Jesus died on the cross, there is a veil in the temple that separates the inner court from the outer court. And it says it is ripped from the top to the bottom. For people not to get that is spitting on the cross of Jesus. The more you love Jesus, the more inclusive you become. The more you love Jesus, the less judgmental you become. The more you love Jesus, the more you know who the real Jesus is. You want everybody to come along so that you can even say to Islamic, now I know this is actually before Islam. I mean, Islam didn't come till the 500, but you know what I mean. They're from that part of the world. They're Arabic. Persia is Iraq. Iraq, Persia is a modern Iraq. They come, and so you can say to people that get it because of perception, every knee will bow and every tongue will confess. And they're like, that's no problem. We already did that. We saw the cross and we saw the star. We worshiped him. Well, did you confess Jesus Christ as your personal Savior so that you didn't go to hell? What? Behold, he comes with clouds, and every eye shall behold him. Which is the holiness of Christmas. Because Christmas starts with these three guys who see it. So now when you hear grown-up Christmas list, oh, there's a great truth to that. I want to see a better world. All right. Is the next thing I have up here the lyrics from Silver Bells? All right. Hold that thought. So, Friday, day before yesterday, I got up. I made some declarations over my day. Two or three really good things happened. You know, people wrote some really, you know, words are very energetic. Sometimes somebody will just write something. It's just such a great, I just love beautiful, energetic words. I love when you can talk to people that it's not work. You don't have to work through their weird psyche or whatever. It's just people, you say something and they get it. And they, you know, and for me, that's the best part of social media. When people just, they just get that concept that you can put something out there and they understand, you know, you can communicate. It's very empowering. Sometimes it's like a vitamin, it's an emotional vitamin B12 shot for me. And that morning had been like, and the more you praise that kind of stuff, the more you attract it to yourself. That's why if somebody starts nonsense with me on Facebook, I just block them just because I'm not afraid of you. I'm just in living a different world now. You go find some other people that want to argue all day long about every little thing. I'm not your guy. I'm just not interested. I'm not afraid of you. I don't even care if I could win the argument or not. I've just opted out of that system. I grew up with too much contentiousness in what was called Christianity. I just, you know, Paul said, if it be possible, live peaceably with all men. I agree with your adversary quickly when you're in the way with him. So I just opt out. But I'm like having this really good day. Now, when I say a good day, you know, Einstein said there's two ways to live. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. And when I post something about just some little thing that happened, like I found a parking space or whatever, I'm not being cute. Look, when you're in a hurry and you've got a lot to do, finding a parking space, I mean, I kind of rank it up there with at least, if not cure for cancer, at least cure from a bad headache. You know what I mean? It's like, It's that good. Well, that the whole day, and I'm finding that my life is becoming this. Man, when you opt out of that spiritual warfare system, it's amazing how good things get. And someone, I had posted a few days earlier about my studio, and because several people had asked me about getting stuff, and I was telling them how to do it. And I said, just for the record, I don't really ship stuff out of state anymore because it's just too expensive. There's a guy, sweet guy, never met him before, but a guy in Texas that bought a painting of mine that we talked about the price, and I said, well, like when you price your art, there's a formula for it. You're supposed to take the cost of materials, and then there's like X amount of hours, and you do the equation. So according to that equation, my stuff is priced about a third of what it should be, which is fine because, it's fine. To me, it's nearly like a hobby, and maybe if I was depending on it for a living, I'd take it a little more seriously, but I just enjoy it. And basically, if I can sell one painting a month, it covers the rent on my studio, and the rest of it, I just enjoy. Well, somebody that used to go to Church in the Now who lives in Texas, back to this guy, I told him, I said, I'll sell it to you, I'll do it for $300. I probably should charge $500 for this, but I'll do it for $300. If you'll buy it for this price, I'll cover shipping and handling. Okay, great. Well, he calls Paris and Ponzi, he gives his card number. I take it to FedEx. It's $300 to ship it by FedEx. And finally, after finding a UPS guy who I don't even know how, I don't want to know. He finally got it down to $150. But the point is, it was just too stressful. And I said, from now on, if you want a piece, and this guy knew about it. He said, I'm really sorry. I said, no, that's the price I told you. I mean, that was the deal. It's on me for not knowing what it costs to ship these big pieces. Patrick had a frame store. He knows what I'm talking about. And so anyway, I said, no, it's good. I'm glad. And he said the day that it came, he just got the most devastating news he'd ever gotten. And he said, I can't tell you what this painting means to me. And it's awesome. And I love that. Valerie came down and met me for lunch, a few weeks ago. And she bought a print. And I took a picture of her. And she's got a pretty smile anyway. But there's just this beam that she has holding the print. I was like, I love this picture. Valerie buying a print. It makes me happy when somebody's happy about the art. And so this guy that used to go to Church in the Now, who also lives in Texas, said, I really do want a print of, it's called In Our Sight. It's the one where, it's the four faces where Jesus is pictured in different ethnicities. And I said, it's fine. I said, I sell that print for $20. I said, if you'll do it for $25, I'll cover shipping and handling. And I said, call Paris and Ponce tomorrow and buy it and give them your address. So Friday, I'm already having this really good morning. Well, I go in to get the print and get the address because I'm going to mail it to him. I walk in, and one of my biggest paintings is missing, like the big white space on the wall. So I go to the front desk. Usually Jonah's there, but he works there. He wasn't working there that day. I said, did one of my paintings sell? And they said, yeah, Bliss. It sold a few days ago. I said, for the price that I had on it, which I think was $500. They said, yeah. I said, well, where is it? They said, it's already been shipped to Chicago. I said, y'all covered shipping and handling? Yeah. I said, they didn't give you a problem about that or about the price? They said, no. I said, who was it? We don't know. Now, I got to tell you, opening Sunday when y'all came, that was a good day, but this one was nearly just as good, and I'll tell you why. When somebody who knows me buys my art, I can't help but think, well, I know they like it, but they also love me and they want a part of me. So, I mean, I get that, and that's fine. When somebody I've never met comes in from Chicago, buys a piece from somebody they've never seen, doesn't even flinch about having it shipped home, just because they like the art, they don't know me, I got to tell you, it was a really good day. I was like, I sold a piece of art. I sold a piece of art. I didn't have to deal with shipping and handling. I didn't, because a lot of times people will come in and they go, oh, I'd love to buy a piece, but you know, it's not really a good time for me financially. And then I see him on Facebook, you know, on a ski trip. I'm like, you basically, you do what you want to do. But anyway, it just was so great. And it set off this thing. It seems like small things, but I thought, well, I texted Christine. I said, I said, I've got a lot to do this afternoon. Is it okay if I don't pick up the girls? I'll get them Monday. Yeah, fine. So I thought, okay, I've got several things I need to do. I need a new pair of black dress pants. And there's a, I don't remember where I got my one good pair of, I usually have like one good, like my Marion Barron suit, my black pants, whatever. And I just wear them out and then I buy a new pair. And it was time to buy a new pair of black pants. So I thought, I don't even know where I got them, but I'm going to go get a pair of black pants. I got several things I need to do. I'm going to go to that just one particular store. I'm going to go there. I haven't been there in years. I want to go there. So as I'm driving, I'm like, oh, well, there's Michael's. I need to go in Michael's because I need to get some supplies because I may want to do a print for Christmas to have at the Christmas banquet. So I go in, and Michael's this time of year looks like Mardi Gras because it's a very busy, it's their busiest time of year. And, I mean, every line was, like, snaked around. And I thought, you know, I don't care. I'm here. I'm just going to get them. I didn't even care. I didn't go, oh, crap. I was like, yeah, well, it's Christmas. People are excited about decorating there. That's fine. I just bought some pins. I wanted to do a pin anything. I buy the pins, walk up, get in one of the insanely long lines. As soon as I get there, I'm telling you, maybe it's just the way I saw it. It looked like he appeared from out of nowhere and just opened. I'm open if anybody needs it. I said, okay. I'm in and out of there in less than 5 minutes. So I get in the car, drive. I'm going slow because I don't want to miss something because I know several things like this happen. Go to this store. It's one of those places, you know how they have like Nordstrom Rack or Off-Fit. They're like high-end department stores that have like outlets. It's not cheap, but it's discounted. And it's cool stuff, so I don't mind going there. I go to this place like that, walk upstairs. I am not kidding you. There is one pair of black pants exactly in my size. It was the designer that I wanted. It's the only pair they have. Every other pair is other colors. I'm in and out. Same thing happened with the lines. Long lines in Nordstrom Rack. I'm standing there with my pants. I mean, I am back. The car, the engine hasn't even cooled off. I got back in. I got in so quick. I get home. Let's see, did I miss something else? Oh, there's a bulb in my dryer, and it's not a short. I know people were concerned about fire. I'm not having a fire. But the bulb's been out, and I keep saying, where do I get a bulb? And he says, I can't even see where it is. He's got to unscrew the thing in the dryer. When you open the thing, it's dark. So I had left some clothes in the dryer. I walk in, open it up. The light is on in the dryer. Now, I'm going to tell you, this morning it wasn't on. I'm just saying that day where everything I was touching was like, I sold a piece of art. I was in and out of Michael's in 5 minutes. I found my black pants. Oh, the light is on. It was just like that. I mean, it's like I'm making this up. So then Ken gets home, and I said, there's a movie I want to see, and it's showing at Tara. So I was thinking, there's a place that it's actually a Thai sushi place, and I get sushi, and there's a Thai dish that he likes there. I said, why don't we go to Rain, and then we have time to go there and then go see the movie. Okay, fine. Go in. Most crowded I've ever seen Rain. I mean, it was so crowded in there that I was like, man, I don't know if we could eat here and see the movie, but let's try. I'm not exaggerating. There's a booth that we love that's in a window. Ken says, I wish we could get that booth right there. He no sooner got the words out of his mouth, hostess walks by. He says, can we have that booth? She says, yeah, come here. I was like, okay, to all these other people who were clearly waiting before we got here, are they cool with that? I mean, we were in and out of there in plenty of time, saw the movie. It was weird, but it's what I wanted to see, and it was good. And just the whole day, and something else happened like that day. It was something, we'd just been like in this magical parking space thing, which this time of year is a big deal. All right, Bishop, what's this got to do with my grown-up Christmas list? All right. I'm sitting in traffic the other day, and it just occurred to me, you know, the less you complain about traffic, the less you get caught in it. And as I'm thinking it, I don't know how that works, but as I'm thinking it, I'm listening to Christmas music. Beautiful. Actually, Bing Crosby wrote this song. City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air, there's a feeling of Christmas. That song, now it's a beautiful song, but that song is about perception. Because that day I had read people saying, my God, I hate Christmas, I hate them all, I hate traffic, I saw people, I have unfollowed so many people, I haven't unfriended them, I've just unfollowed them, because I just don't want to see their nonsense in my feed. And I can't believe the army of Scrooges that are out there, that are all just complaining about traffic. And I think, the more you complain about it, the more you get caught in. Now, look, traffic's just a fact of life. When people say, isn't there a lot of traffic in Atlanta? Yeah, it's a city with a lot of people that drive cars. So you do the math. Makes traffic. That'd be like going, I would go to Florida in the summer, but it's hot there. It's too much sand on the beach. Like, just stay home. It's like, Judah will remember this. Christina was dating a guy one time that we took the whole family to New York. Little guy from a little town in Alabama. Clearly, he hadn't even seen Atlanta, much less New York. We're doing stuff to show him a good time. I've already been on top of the Empire State Building several times. And I'm still blown away by it. I mean, I lose my breath when I go up there. You have to pay a fee. So that means I had to pay for all of my kids to go up there to show him one of the wonders of the world. People fly in from around the world. We stood in line for an hour, get up there, like, what do you think? And he's like, that's all right. I thought, I'm finna throw you down off of this building. We're about to see how fast can a redneck boy hit the pavement on the corner of 5th and 34th Street. I don't know how fast he can, but I'm about to find out. I thought, how are you not blown away by this? What's that got to do with silver bells? All right. Some people, like, oh my God, the mall's a nightmare. Look at, I don't know how much of the, I think I just put the second verse on here. What do you got? What's that? Oh. All right, this is the second verse, and this is very subtle. But I'm telling you, this is such a rhema word to me. This is nearly as profound as let your yes be yes and your no be no. Strings of street lights, even stoplights, blinking bright red and green as the shoppers rush home with their treasures. Hear the snow crunch, see the kids bunch. This is Santa's big day. And above all this bustle, you hear, what are most people complaining about? The bustle. All the freaking bustle. Bah humbug. I'm sitting there in my car, Silver Bells is playing, and something about that phrase, even stoplights blink a bright red and green. I said, that's it. That's it. That's perception. And some people don't get it. Some people are like, oh my God, I hate this traffic. Ugh! oh, I got caught by a red light again. This paradigm is even stoplights blink a bright red and green. Can you imagine having your perception so cleansed that even when you get stopped at a stoplight, you're like, oh, yeah, that is really a beautiful shade of red. Makes me think of Christmas. Hear the snow crunch. This is Santa's. And above all the bustle, you hear silver bells. Silver bells, there aren't real silver bells ringing. This is talking about consciousness. Above all the, if it's not bustle, it's something. Do you know what I mean? Like paying bills, raising kids, dealing with relationship issues, paying taxes, all those things, that's bustle. And it just comes with life. And I've noticed that many times if I post something, that there's always somebody that wants to just bring you back to reality. Like I told you, you know, we went out west somewhere and rented a convertible. It was like something I really looked forward to. I spoke at the TFAM thing, and I said, you know what I really want to do? I've never seen the Grand Canyon. Let's rent a car. I said, I know it'll be hot, but I want to take a convertible to the Grand Canyon. I just want to do it. It didn't cost that much more than a regular car. And we weren't, we just wanted a convertible. Posted a picture. Y'all need to wear sunscreen. It's too hot out there. Don't you know you're going to get cancer? Right? I'm like, God, I hate y'all so much. Why can't, we just took a picture. It's not like we're driving for hours going, fry me up, son. No, we're not doing that. We just took a picture. The appropriate response is, oh my God, what a cool car. Looks like y'all are having such a good time. That's all you need to say. What? Sunblock? Well, Lord, we ain't never heard of that. How did we raise 6 children and 4 grandchildren and we didn't know that? It's like one day I was walking here, and right out here, and somebody's dog jumped up and scratched my arm, and I took a picture of it. It's like I'm sharing my days, what I did. Everybody said, you need to put something on that. No. Do I really? What? I've never heard of antiseptic. Fill me in. And then it sets off this whole argument about pit bulls. I'm like, oh my God, why did I put this thing? And when you hear some people's responses, you want to go, this is why your life is like you like it is. This is why Jesus said to them that have will more be given, and them that have not will be taken away. And until you get that, I don't know that you can explain that to somebody. Why didn't you tell her? Because she wouldn't have believed it. She had to learn it for herself. That's why I took that picture. I looked at the blanked out window, go take a shower, get ready, came out, gorgeous blue sky. I mean, it was like, here's my second Wizard of Oz reference, it was like Dorothy opening the black and white movie into the Technicolor. Like, look at this gorgeous day. And for those of you that fly a lot, you know it's always a beautiful day. Like, if once you get up above the clouds, the sun's always shining. It's just a matter of perspective and perception. And this is, I know this is really simple, even stoplights blink a bright red and green, but I can't stop thinking about it. Because I think this is why, until you start celebrating the little miracles, you're wasting your time believing for the big ones. Even to the point, and look, if I allude to anybody that's contacted me, I'm not throwing anybody under the bus. I'm using people for examples. Somebody wrote me on one of my posts. They said, well, I keep visualizing something about getting my truck fixed or whatever, and I want to go, well, you still have to get your truck fixed. I'm not saying you don't go get things repaired. But all I said was, hang in there. Because she said, what am I doing wrong? I said, hang in there. And I'm not being dismissive. I'm just saying, there's certain things I can't. You either get this or you don't. Jude and I have had this conversation a bazillion times because between the two of us, We've had, what, 15 reality shows pitched to us? And we've talked about ad infinitum. Like, what is going on with this crazy thing? And as soon as you have the conversation, I just don't know why more people, like, as soon as you do that, like, we went to hear Chelsea Shag last night. Chelsea was wailing on that guitar. I told Ken, I said, she's incredible. When I hear people like Chelsea or Marshall Ruffin or John Scott, I'm like, they're as good as anybody I hear on whatever. But as soon as you say, I don't know why more people don't, you've missed the point. We finally decided, Jude and I both did, we said, we've already made it. We're going to stop saying, well, I just don't know what it takes to finally, no. That's ridiculous. As soon as you say that, all you're seeing is a stop sign, a stoplight. As soon as you say, we've already made it. Even stoplights blink a bright red and green as the shoppers rush home with their treasures. Isn't that a very different verbal thing than, my God, these people in this line, I hate this time of year. As the shoppers rush home with their treasures, that is a completely different paradigm. And that's what I want to talk to you about this month. I talk a little bit about this every year at this time, but this, it's the time that you're supposed to do it. Christmas is supposed to be magical. Don't curse it. Even if there's something about it you don't like, don't take it away from somebody else. I love all of it. I love fruitcake. And see? Don't make that face. That's what I'm talking about. I didn't tell you to eat it. I'm saying I love it. I love eggnog. Don't make a face. I didn't tell you to drink it. I'm saying I love it. So the whole thing about strings of street lights, even stoplights, blinking bright red and green. Let me wrap this up. This is Mark 11:23, and this is in the Jonathan Mitchell New Testament. Indeed, I am now saying, or I am truly saying now, that whoever may say to this mountain, or in this mountain, be picked up and be cast or thrown into the midst of the sea, and may not be undecided, let your yes be yes, or your no be no, or be divided in his discernment or judgment within his heart, but to the contrary, can or may or would continuously trust and believe with confidence that what he is speaking is progressively occurring or birthing itself. I love that. Coming into existence, it will proceed being thus for him or by him, to him, in him, or with him. Basically, is you have what you say. And that's why when I taught a few weeks ago about God loves a cheerful giver, if you thought that was about money, you totally missed my point. My point was it was about attitude. And Avery got on this jag lately. She's been amazingly insightful. But we were talking afterwards. She said, I know why you've had to process this whole thing about the yes and no with giving. She said, because you had a lot of people that said yes with their giving but then left. So they gave you a yes and the no. I was like, okay, you just went a little too deep there, Sigmund Freud. You're messing with my tectonic plates here. But I thought, well, you know what? That probably is right. Because when somebody gives to you, that says, I love you. If they give to you and then turn on you, it really sends a weird mixed signal to you. That's why your yes has to be yes. That's why you shouldn't even... If you get this, you can even bless your enemies because you can just say, well, you know what? They served a purpose in my life and they were part of the whole thing and, you know, it's good. I don't have time to be mad at anybody. Even like the ultimate is Joseph saying to his brothers, you meant it for evil, but God used it for good. Like, I know you tried to destroy my life, but look, I'm the king of Egypt now and I'm able to save my whole family. That's being the head and not the tail, above only and not beneath, when you can say, I am good with everyone. And then finally, Dr. Dyer gave me, I've never used this quote before, but it sums up perfectly what I'm talking about, and then we'll go. He says, to be more childlike, I'm talking about my grown-up Christmas list, you don't have to give up being an adult. The fully integrated person is capable of being both an adult and a child simultaneously. Recapture the childlike feelings of wide-eyed excitement, spontaneous appreciation, cutting loose, and being full of awe and wonder at this magnificent universe. Let me tell you this one other thing that really worked in my favor about this. In the midst of my day, I dropped off my dry cleaning, and I hadn't eaten anything, and there's an Arden's Garden right next. It's right over here. So I thought, you know what? They've got those meal replacement smoothies. I'm going to go get one of those. They have this kale slam that's got kale and pineapple and ginger in it. It's so good. And you can get a protein supplement. It's great. So I go in there, neat little guy behind the counter, and they were playing, what Michael Jackson song were they playing? I can't remember. It was a Michael Jackson song that you cannot not move to. I want to say maybe it was the Jackson 5 singing You Want to Be Starting Something. I can't remember, but it was clearly a Michael Jackson song. And I was just in such a good mood for my day. The whole time while he's waiting on other people getting mine, I'm just into it. I couldn't help myself. I was just like, you want to be starting something? You want to be starting? Well, anyway, the smoothies aren't cheap. It was like $9. So it says, do you want to tip the guy? And so I put another dollar on there. Well, I never checked. When I got home that night, I was just looking at my bank statement. Somehow I don't know what happened, but I put a zero. They charged me $109 for the thing. I don't enjoy, yeah, better have been. So I called, and it was that same guy. I said, listen, I was in there a few hours ago, and I said, I wadded up the receipt and threw it in the garbage, but I'm sure you can still find it. I said, it should have been like $10.90 something. Anyway, so I'm trying, and he said, wait a minute, are you the guy that was dancing to the Michael Jackson song? I said, yes. He said, I know who you are. He said, we'll refund the money. He said, actually, we'll have to refund the entire thing. So basically, I got a free smoothie out of it. He said, he said, let me call you right back. He said, I just talked to the manager that she'll call you Monday morning and they'll refund everything. But I thought it's interesting that my story was, because I didn't have a receipt. My joy became my receipt. And I never do that, but it was specifically a Michael Jackson song because I remember looking at the girl over there and she wasn't moving. I was like, how can you not move to this song? I mean, I'm not saying I was like break dancing, but I mean, you know, I'm just like, I was just having such a great day. And that basically saved me $100. Because otherwise I wouldn't have any way of proving that was me. He said, oh, you're the guy that was dancing to Michael Jackson. I said, yes, I was. You want to be still? Mama say, Mama. I never know that part. All right, I got to go. I could talk all day about this, but we got to get out of here. Stand up. Go ahead and hit the close, and then I'll speak a blessing of perception over you. Isn't that good about Silver Bell?
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy. Simply text the amount you would like to give to 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit missionthenow.com and click the support tab, then my online donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
If you're making a check, make it to JESM and Danny will be better to receive it. If you have cash, you can pay it forward. If you want to bless Judah, you can do that. I'll be giving him something today too, but if you want to do that, that's fine. His service will be at 5:00 in East Atlanta. And I'm sure they'll have a great one. And I just speak a blessing of perception over your holiday. That you, not just see the glass half full, but you see even stoplights blink a bright red and green. And that your entire world changes because your perception changes. If your perception is enlightened, your whole body will be enlightened. Your whole body will be filled with light. I fill you with light today. I surround you with light. I speak light over you. You walk in the light. The darkness cannot overtake it. God bless you. Go in peace. I love you.